For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Borussia Dortmund have won the European Cup Winners' Cup.
You can feel the passion, the emotion.
And Dortmund, against all the odds, are European champions.
Hey, BVB fans, welcome to Believe in Borussia, episode number 29. And this one will be a special one. We have a very special guest who is an OG in anything international Borussia Dortmund. We as a US-based entity are very interested in anything international, and no one knows that better than Suresh Lechmanan, who is the director of Asia Pacific for Borussia Dortmund and opened Dortmund's first international office in Singapore. So we will have him on the show today. To have more time for Suresh and less time for me talking to myself, we will cut some of the other things short and get right into the interview. But before we do that, I'd be remiss if not to remind you to go over to BetOnline, our sponsor. Head over there to the updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can just use the promo code BELIEVE50 to receive that bonus. And there are so many things that you can bet on, from MLB, obviously right now World Series going on, to, I don't know, the next quarterback being benched in the NFL, and of course, anything related soccer. So without further ado, let's get right to the interview. I have Suresh Lechmanan with me. He's the managing director of Asia Pacific Borussia Dortmund and the founder of the office over there. And I'm so happy to talk with him because there's probably not a person in the world that knows more about international BVB affairs than Suresh. He's the OG of international things. But before we get into all what he does and all the things that he rocks in Asia, I just want to know from him, because he was just recently in Dortmund. How is Dortmund?
Morning, Thilo. Good evening, Thilo. Guten Morgen or Guten Abend. Thank you for having me here on your talk show. Yeah, it's been a great to be back from Dortmund. I was away for the last 10 days. Recently got back a couple of days ago. As I mentioned, it's a breath of fresh air to be out of the country, of my country, where I'm based here in Singapore, for the last 20 months that we haven't had any form of traveling out of the country. So taking the first foot off into the plane was a little anxious for me. That 13 and a half hours flight to Frankfurt, and then another further 3 hours on the train to the beloved Dortmund. It was just amazing. I was just ecstatic. I was extremely happy and proud to be back in Dortmund after so long, meeting friends, meeting colleagues. I had a couple of clients and a couple of people that are also traveling from other parts of the world that were in Dortmund. So it was really, really great. And to catch a couple of games as well, to enjoy nice German beer again, to have a good Bratwurst. So yeah, I'm not complaining. It was brilliant.
Yes. And how was the atmosphere? I mean, obviously there was a reduced audience, but did you still feel that spark?
I mean, look, you're talking about one of the best clubs in the world. I mean, even talking about it, I'm just rubbing my skin right now. It's Signal Iduna Park. It's the best stadium. It's the shrine of European football, in my opinion. So I think it was just going back to the stadium was unreal for me. I mean, I've seen empty stadiums on telly, and I've seen how it is from the discussions I had with my friends and my colleagues. It's not the same when having fans back in the stadium to see at least 35,000, seeing the yellow wall being filled up after so many months. So that's such a joy. The atmosphere obviously was loud. It wasn't, obviously, you can't compare it with a 80,000 capacity, but it made up for the difference. So the players were psyched up. I mean, you're playing Sporting Lisbon in the in a Champions League match. Come on an evening, in an evening match, players were psyched up, and it was a great win for us. And I was happy, grateful, blessed to be in that stadium that night.
Yeah, and apparently a good luck charm, because Dortmund still lost under your watchful eye in our stadium, I heard.
Absolutely. I will hope to hold that record 7 years. I've only had a couple of draws and wins. So, if you don't take the cup finals in Berlin into consideration. So, as long as it's in Dortmund, yes, I would like to keep that record going.
So, and in terms of the vibe, like, obviously, you were probably with your colleagues at Dortmund. But, I mean, you must have seen the audience. Were they excited? Were people, like, a little distanced and shrugged off? Or could you see the sparkle in the eyes around?
I mean, it's a match in Dortmund, and it's a home game. I mean, you could see everyone, you know, celebrating, you know, coming together. We see families together. It's so nice to see everyone coming and sitting together, cheering, you know, singing. I mean, I haven't seen this in the last 20 months, and to see this and witness this again, it was unreal for me. I had a fantastic welcome as well for my colleagues, and they were like, "Hey, Suresh, where are you? Oh, good to see you, my friend. You know, it's been months." I said, "Yeah, it's been months. Seems like years." But it was so nice to get everyone, to see everyone together and see the crowd singing. You know, it was just breathtaking. And again, that was just a Champions League match. And then a couple of days later, to catch the Bundesliga game against Augsburg was also special in an afternoon kickoff. And like I said, it's something that is really, really special to take yourself to the stadium. And now there will be more fans coming. So I'm hoping at some stage we'll have full capacity back again.
Yeah, we all hope that. From very afar, it's been my impression as well. The people that are going into the stadium, they really want to be there. It's obviously not at capacity. And there are people that, you know, for various reasons don't want to go right now. But it felt like the people that are there, you know, they really want to just be with other people again, you know, enjoy it together, have that communal experience. And yeah, I mean, sounds like you had that too, which is great.
Yeah, but I think, and at the same time, Tilo, I think there's also certain measures that are in place. So I think, you know, if you're going indoors, you better wear your mask on. So I think there were good measures that were in place by the club. I think that obviously shows some discipline, shows some commitment, and shows some responsibility as well. And that was really important for us to set a statement or a mark in terms of how we manage our events in the stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are in different times, and, you know, just have to reckon with reality. At the same time, yeah, I think it's just great that we are at least at a stage where somehow we can bring it back a little bit, right? That we can let that flame a little bit. If you haven't heard anyone scream in like 2 years, 20,000 sounds like the loudest roar you probably have heard in a long time,
right?
You know. And
absolutely.
And to your point, like, if I, you know, watching the players on television, it seems like they're also really enjoying, like a guy like Haaland or even Bellingham, they love their interaction, you know. And I think in the moment when they're celebrating something and they're running into, you know, in front of the stands, I mean, it would be better if there's 80,000, but even if there's 100 people standing there, these people are giving you something and they're giving them something back. And that's something we haven't had in a long time.
I mean, funny enough, you mentioned this because I think the players obviously were so motivated. They were all ready to go out there, because to see the fans on the stands, it's different, and, you know, it gives you that added boost, you know, into your psychological and your physical aspect of the game. So I think that was so important for the place. I was a bit fortunate enough because I went to the training ground, and we happened to bump into Jude Bellingham, and he was such a nice and lovely guy, and we had a couple of small chats, and he was said, "Look, great. I was just so happy to see all the fans back in the stadium." And before I joined the club, everyone was mentioning about the whole 80,000 capacity. And again, to see at least half of it in the stadium was unreal. So it was really nice to hear it from him as well. So nice experience, to be honest.
He's such a great player. And he seems like an even better lad, yeah, like a better person, which is great. And yeah, I mean, you're obviously marketing, you know, partnerships is a big part of what you do. And part of that, the core of Borussia Dortmund is this culture, the stadium atmosphere, you know, this community that we have in the stadium. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is also always part of the pitch to players, right? It's like, come here, play in front of the yellow wall, play in the temple. Yep. Like, you will experience the game like you don't experience anywhere else. And I feel like a lot of the players, like take a Thomas Meunier, right, who comes on, has always said this is something he appreciates, and he plays 1 year without fans. Yeah. Sure, it didn't help him.
Absolutely. And again, when you mentioned the stadium, you talk about the Sud Tribune, the South Stand, the Galbavan, you know, the yellow wall. And of course, what we always keep saying whenever we try to export the BVB feel or the Dortmund feel, Echte Liebe, and that's exactly what it is all about. It's real love. And to experience this again in the stadium and to export this whole experience out of the club into the international markets, you can't do it. It's very emotional. You have to bring people over from wherever parts of the world and experience this, because it's not the same when you share it out from your laptop or from the television or whatever, than physically be there and experience this whole adrenaline in that sense. So you've just said it right, you know, with the likes of Thomas Meunier and some of the other players, and now seeing more fans being allowed to come back, it's a different feel. You just see more spark, you see a little bit more, you know, adrenaline that's been in the team as well. So it's just so important for us, and we are built, the club is built around fans, and that's exactly what it is about this club. And when you go to a stadium like this, you see fans around cheering, singing, screaming. Even if we are going down with 1-0 or whatever, the whole capacity of the crowds behind the team, and that's something that's very unique in the whole BVB culture.
Yeah, agreed. It's good to see it back. And I'm definitely in the group of glass half full. Yes, it's not perfect. Yes, you know, there are still obviously limitations. Certain things aren't possible at the moment. But man, it was some dire, dire days. So I'm just happy, you know, that a little bit of the happiness returned. But okay, we could probably go on and on and on about fans and a stadium. But I also want to share a little bit of about you. Who is this gentleman here that, you know, flies a halfway around the world and then greets his 1,000 friends in Dortmund? I don't want to get too deep into your background, because if I remember correctly, we talked about this a while back, you were an Air Force pilot in Singapore, weren't you? Weren't you in Air Force?
I was in the Air Force, but wasn't a pilot. I was actually working in the control tower. But
let's just say you were a pilot. Yeah, I think that's good enough. All right. Air Force, semi-professional soccer player, I think. Yep. Studied law in England. Halfway around, worked in Japan. So jack of all trades, all around the world. How does that lead to becoming the managing director of Borussia Dortmund Asia and Pacific? Like, where do the dots connect?
Tilo, I like the way you just panned everything out. Fantastic. Look, you know, my dream was always to be part of football, and since I was a little child, you know, my grandparents or my granddad and my uncles were all football fans, and my granddad was a big Man United fan because he had a long-standing relationship prior to the British colony, and he was part of the British Army then. And then he had his first red shirt from George Best, if you could remember this fantastic player, George Best, and also with from Bobby Charlton. And then I saw this shirt that was hanging in his room. And then my uncle took this and he said, this is the club that granddad supports. So I was like, I didn't know anything about English football or any football. I just saw the name Best and with the number, I think it was 11, if I'm not wrong, behind it. And I said, wow, that's a very cool shirt. And that's when I started falling in love with football. And then rolling back a couple of years there later, my uncle, who was working for the Deutsche Bank, and he moved to Germany for a couple of months, and then he came back with two shirts. One is also a red shirt and the other one was a black and yellow shirt. And I was so driven by the black and yellow, I was caught by the black and yellow shirt, because I thought, wow, this is cool. And then I saw there was a BVB logo in there, or a BVB initials in it. I said, oh, this is a very cool shirt. And I asked my uncle, being a very young kid, and I said, yeah, where is this from? Probably a silly question. And this is from Germany. I said, oh, okay, pretty nice. I like the color as well. And the other shirt was a Bayern shirt, because his boss was a Bayern fan, and he got a very nice shirt signed off by Paul Breitner. And then one was a Paul Breitner shirt and the ball signed by Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. And this was way back in, I think I was, I can remember correctly, 81, 82. That was the team probably that played in the World Cup in Italy. So Hansi Müller, Krubesch, and all these guys were part of that team. And then I fell in love with the whole German football culture. But I was just intrigued by the black and yellow. Then rolling back to the future, in 96, 97 was the team that I saw. And I said, look, this black and yellow team brings goosebumps to me. And I'm quite intrigued to have this following with this club. Then I started following the 97 team or 96 before they won the Champions League then. The 96 team was the team that I saw in how they played with English clubs, and I was very very intrigued by the way they performed, especially with the with Jürgen Koller and all these players that were playing, Karl-Heinz Riedler,
Sammer, Müller,
yeah, exactly, Lambert, and all these guys. So when I saw 97, wow, this team was the team that I would like to see at some stage. Rolling down in 2014, when I had the opportunity to be part of this club, was a dream come true for me. I mean, I had, as you mentioned, had a different career path in my life, but I always wanted to be a footballer. But I've never had a chance to dream to become one, due to the limitations of opportunities, and also if you were to look at how much you would want to make a career out of football, in especially in the country where I am in Southeast Asia, it's not the best. And the best for me was to see if I could engineer an opportunity to work in football, which I was blessed with. And I was working for a Japanese company called Dentsu, the platform for me to work and look into different parts of the football industry within Asia. And then at some stage, I had the opportunity to also be in touch with European football clubs. And then I had a knock on the door from Borussia Dortmund. And they are looking to open an office here in Asia. And I said, yep. I'm keen to look into an opportunity, and as they say, the rest was history. Having the next couple of months in Dortmund for a while, and then being based back in Singapore, and then you see a familiar face on television and running around every 4 years in a World Cup, a certain individual coming in and being part of your ambassadorial team in Asia was Karl-Heinz Riedler. And I was like, hey man, I remember you. And it was super cool. And being an ardent football fan, and at the same time, having seen him play in the UK as well, and we obviously got connected, and he spoke English with a Scouser accent, which was a little strange for me, but it worked. And we just got connected. And we went on talking about football and talking about life. And yeah, it was still today, we are like best friends. But it was just so unreal to talk about football to a living legend, right, who won the World Cup, Champions League, and giving you insights about dressing rooms. And it was so cool, man. It's it was a nice experience. And until today, with year seventh, I've just completed year seventh with the club. I'm just grateful to be here, and I'm so honored to be here and pleased to be representing the black and yellow family.
Lucky number seven in that case. Congratulations. And just for some context, Dentsu, that's a big agency. So, you know, you were sort of already in the expanded area of, you know, in an industry in a sense, I suppose. It's still quite an interesting leap, I imagine, to go from a well-established company with probably lots of like employees and a big team to starting over in Singapore as the spear of Borussia Dortmund in Asia. And you have the office in Singapore now and in Beijing, right?
No, in Shanghai. I mean, you're absolutely right. 100%. I started from ground zero. I mean, to build Dortmund from ground zero was, I would say, was quite challenging, because in a mature market like Singapore, and especially in Southeast Asia, and to the matter of fact, it's even Asia, you have the presence of the Premier League clubs, right? So your Man United, your Liverpools, your Chelsea's, your Arsenal's, they've all had their brand present here years ago. The English clubs have been here like 25, 30 years ago. So obviously they had a foothold into the market. They had times and times again of having games played in Asia. So the fan base is relatively strong. and a solid one as well. So, and then for us, it's our first escapade, as I would put it, here into the Asian market. And having taken that into consideration, you also look into over your shoulder, you have the likes of Barcelona, you have the likes of Real Madrid, and of course, Paris Saint-Germain, and all these clubs that are based in and around the region. So it was something that you need to sort of roll your sleeve and be on ground and try to make as much noise as you can. But fortunate enough, in 2015, we brought the team over to Singapore, to Malaysia, and to Japan. Again, we had a significant player.
Shinji
Kagawa, as you're right. And Shinji was a superstar in Asia. And he is still a superstar, in my opinion. And, you know, and whenever Shinji is around, you know, fans were drawn to the club in that sense. So, and we were lucky to have him back when I joined. So it was nice to have him around and to be part of the team. And he was not just warming the bench. He was part of the first team. So he was literally playing for the team. And that was nice. And I think 2015, when I think we had Thomas Tuchel who took over from the reins from Jurgen Klopp, and you could see that the team was good, strong, and they were on tours. And we had a couple of sessions. We had a training session in Singapore, but we didn't have a game there, unfortunately. But we had a game in Johor, which was a bit of a culture shock for most of the players who have not been out of Europe. Being in Malaysia was a real experience in that sense. I would have put it in that way, candidly. And then they were in Japan as well, so the home of Shinji, and it was nice. And in food, culture, customs, I think that sort of brings everyone together. And we grew the BVB family internationally, and then we had more fan clubs. We started to do more fan engagements. The partnership side of things and the commercial side of things slowly began to grow. And yeah, we organically grew the team, and we made a promise to be in Asia for 2 years on that stretch. And in fact, we stayed 3 years rather than 2 years. So the next year we were in Japan and China, and then in 2017 we were back in China again, and then 2018-2019 we were in the US. So yeah, that's how we grew. And yeah, it was, as I mentioned, Tilo, it was a little challenging in the beginning, but I think now with the players that we have, then with Aubameyangs of this world, the Mario Götzes of this world, the Mkhitaryans of this world, I mean, Gundogan, they were all part of this wonderful team. And then right now, having one of the best strikers in the world, with Haaland, the one of the best young midfielders in the world, with Jude Bellingham, having one of the best German footballers, I would say, with Marco Reus, I think you can see that the team has built quite a formidable position in European football.
No, absolutely. I mean, glass half full, half empty, or at least I would say two-thirds full at least, you know. there were obviously opportunities in the past when we would have wished for us to be just a little bit better, but I think people forget a little too easily how far the club has come in terms of like consolidating itself. 10, 11, 12 years ago, we were dreaming of playing in the champions, just being in the group stage. You know, I remember when Jurgen Klopp took office, and in the first or second season, when I was still in Germany, and we would go to games, we were looking at each other and we were like, man, maybe next year we can play Europa League. That was legit what we were like. This is a young team. They give a crap again. They play decent. Maybe we can even have an international game. That was our level of expectation. Now it's like, man, when are we going to win the freaking championship again? You know, I'm obviously over-exaggerating. We're in the Champions League, top 15, probably top 12 club in the world in terms of like revenue, reach, players, potential. We do literally have the best young talent period on the planet, bar none. Like there's not a single club that has the combination of youth, but it's also good. We don't just have young players for young players' sake. The young players that we have are probably the best at their age. So... Yep. Yeah, you know, like those are all accomplishments, and we did it all by, you know, while still consolidating and growing the club, reducing debt, building more equity, investing in Bruckel, investing in, you know, infrastructure in the stadium. So I want to recognize that here too. And obviously a big part of that is also what you guys are doing, tipping my hat. Just want to go back real quick to what you were saying about Shinji, because I'm just curious. you know, the materials that we see from the tour is obviously kind of balanced because Dortmund doesn't have an interest to, you know, make one player look much better than the other. But like, was there a difference? Was he really like a nudge above everybody? Like I get Roman and Marco Reus are popular players, even in Asia. When it comes to Dortmund, you know, they probably get recognized and all that. But if Çinci would turn the corner, everybody would like scuttle over, or how was it? Like how crazy was the Çinci craze?
Yeah, I mean, again, Çinci obviously, and he was a superstar under Jürgen Klopp. I mean, watching him play, I mean, coming from a second division club in Japan and being scouted and knowing the fact that he will be a big addition and a big plus to the team, it shows and it was proven that he was that player. And especially with his build, he's not the big size player in that sense, but he had talent both, you know, on the pitch and off the pitch as well. How he sort of bring fans, the Asian fans together, or just international fans together, was also quite nice to see as well.
Was he also really popular outside of Japan? He was obviously big in Japan.
Oh yes, absolutely. When he comes to Southeast Asia, for example, I mean, Çinci flies the flag for Asia. I mean, he's just not purely for the guys in Japan, for example. So whenever he travels to the other markets, like China, for example, when we go to Southeast Asia, everybody wants to a piece of Çinci because he's the darling of Asian football. And he also had a chance to play for Manchester United under Alex Ferguson. Then there was something special about Çinci. And whenever he's on the pitch, you know, the crowds go wild.
Can we call him the Asian dream? Because it feels like it's a rags to riches story. You come from the second division in Japan. Nobody's heard of you before. And all of a sudden you're playing Champions League, winning championships in Europe. Not as a bench warmer, but as a key cog in a team. You go to United.
Absolutely. It's a fantastic story. Unbelievable. And I mean, again, there are good Asian players. I mean, look at Son for right now. I mean, he was in Leverkusen and then he's in Tottenham right now. I mean, look at he's formidable, unbelievable. And there are top Asian talents that are out here. It's just, we just need to find. We look at Hasebe, for example, in Eintracht Frankfurt. He spent years in the club and has done really, really well. And even for a club like us, I mean, we've had, apart from Çinci, we had Lee Yong-pyo before, who used to play for PSV Eindhoven, Tottenham Hotspur, and he was with us for a couple of years. We had Park Ju-hoo, who was for Mainz with Thomas Tuchel. I mean, even though he didn't have much games under him, but, you know, he had some games with Dortmund. And they had G, who was also part of the Dortmund from Augsburg to Dortmund. So again, you see there were three or four really good Asian players that have graced the club, and not just as bench warmers, but as players that would want to participate or at least be fielded in the first team. And that's exactly what's important for the club. We are not here to look at players that we will sell merchandise for us, and that's not the club's ethos or the club's philosophy in a sense. And on that note as well, look at what we are building in terms of youth. We had youth players that have come through the system, you know, from Pulisic, you know, to Felix Paslak, now Mukoko, we have Gio Reyna. Look, you know, there is a nice story. I mean, we're not only looking at buying players, we're looking at building and grooming and generating and producing top players. And that's exactly what we have. And that's why the system is in place. And that's why the youth system and the youth philosophy is such a big, important aspect of our club's DNA.
You just touched on it in terms of like what you're trying to achieve in Asia, I want to say. And obviously it's also, when you talk about Asia, we're talking about a very diverse market here. Singapore is probably very different from Vietnam, which is very different from Indonesia, which is then again very different from Northern China, for example. So, you know, from income levels, exposure, media, reach, all that good stuff. So just want to flag that, you know, we are aware that it's different. Most of you will, but like...
I get what you mean.
Yeah, how do you service a market like that? And how do you like measure the growth? I mean, obviously it's different than when you started 2015, but what are the moments where you realize, wow, like this is really taking off, or crazy, this is the impact that we want to see?
I can share stories, and if I do, it's probably going to take a long time, but I can tell you honestly, it's these are real fans. I mean, we had experiences in Indonesia, for example. I brought Kalle Riedler there when we won the DFB Pokal in 2017 and 2018. We had a tour of the cup in the whole of Southeast Asia and parts of Asia. And I took Kalle Riedler there. And mind you, man, I've never seen fans that were so crazy. They were singing songs. They were singing real Dortmund songs in German. And it's not like in Bahasa or in English. They were singing German songs. And it was unbelievable. And they were there. And Kalle Riedler told me, Suresh, this is wow. I said, yeah, this is just the tip of the iceberg. You haven't seen anything more than what I'm going to show you. And he was blown away. And this is exactly why I would say, look, you know, our philosophy is simple. I know it's difficult to be a Dortmund fan. We know it's you need to have some certain touch points with the club. A lot of the people here in Asia are predominantly fans of the English clubs. Maybe some with Barca and Real. But there's still space in your heart for a second team. And I always drill this, that you can have more than one club in your heart. So if you have a first team that's from the Premier League, you have a second team that's in your heart, that's Dortmund. And that's exactly how we try to engage with the fans and build affinity and build emotions with the club. Because you can't change, I mean, if you have a first team that you support and that will be the only team, that's fine. But let's be a little bit more creative here and experimental as well to look into different leagues. Why don't you look in the German league, for example? There's one special club out there. And it has a beautiful color of black and yellow. It's one of the most amazing stadium experiences you've ever seen in world football. And why don't you come and have a look at this club and then see exactly how this club is doing. And you will find a different experience altogether. Look at the young players that's coming out from it. That's a nice story to tell. And that's exactly how we go to each market and try to share this experience to all their fans. And slowly and surely they start looking into it and say, yeah, great. And it helps when you also have young players who are also vibrant on social media. They talk about the club and what they do. And look, Dortmund is a very traditional club. It's not superficial. We are here for football. We are not here to, you know, to beat around the bush and yeah, you know, blah blah blah, and you know, and try to sensationalize ourselves. Yes, we are in a market whereby we are competing with the big boys, with the bigger clubs, and we have the quality and we have the ability to challenge these clubs and on the pitch because we have players, yeah, and we have also seen players coming out of the club and then have gone to other clubs as well. So going to different markets, it's obviously you know, trying to build in that affinity. I tend to bring in the legends with me. Sometimes if we do have first team players that are on tour, we tend to bring them along as well, so that they could share stories, they could share insights, they could share experiences that you won't hear it from people like me, but you hear it from people that have been on the pitch, and people have been on the dressing room, people have been on Champions League finals, and these are stories that comes in, you know, one in a million years in that sense, you know what I mean? So that's exactly how we start building that BVB stories as we go along internationally.
And I think you make a super important point here. You know, you always have to consider it in the cultural context. And to my knowledge, I've not been there, but for example, China, it's very common to have like multiple soccer teams. You know, you like one league, you like another league, and then maybe a third. When you see sometimes, and I always find it funny when, for example, German clubs or whatever post, oh, we have this and that many followers in China. That doesn't mean that, I don't know, 10 million Chinese fans are Dortmund or Bayern fans or whatever. Yes, they are, but they're probably, half of them is probably also a United or a Chelsea or whatever fan.
Sure, absolutely.
And European, you know, fans probably don't understand that because they just grow up with it and nobody questions sort of like that sort of mindset because that's all you know. But you have to understand when you're in Asia or you're outside of, even in America, your dad's not going to take you to the stadium, at least to Dortmund, and it's going to like spoon feed you this club over and over and over again. Like you wouldn't listen to just one band, you know, like you or watch one film from the States. watch several shows because you find them all entertaining and interesting. But eventually, with the right stories, you probably pick a favorite too. I mean, in my experience, I talk with fans on my podcast and with fan club founders, and I ask them like, how did you get into it? And a few of them, you know, I've said, like, you know, I started watching football through the Premier League because that's the first thing that was available in the States, like in a quality presentation. But then some of them switched because they liked it, but they didn't like it as much as this club from Germany that the more they knew about it, the more they related to it. And it went from, yeah, I like both to, you know what, this is my team and that's what I'm doing. And I think I think the fans that are singing in German and in Indonesia or whatever, I think they're pretty committed. I think that's safe to say.
I honestly, Tilo, to be very honest with you, we have close to about 500,000 followers in Indonesia and 600,000 followers in Indonesia, 500,000 followers in Thailand, and that about the same amount in Vietnam. And I'm not saying this because I work for the club, because I've seen it by myself. I've had players like Jo Heinrich. I mean, Jo Heinrich, not the best of players when it comes to speaking English, or at least trying to connect with the fans. But his presence, being a Champions League winner, his presence being part of the 97 team, part of the BVB Legends team, it was phenomenal for me, because the players, I mean, the fans were there knowing about his stats, knowing about his families, knowing about the matches that he played for Dortmund, and they were single-handling it in a way whereby he was surprised to know that they know all these stats about him. He was playing for Fiorentina, and who he was partnering with in defense with Di Livio and all that stuff. And all these questions were raised to him, and he was like, man, this is unreal. So you're not looking at just superficial fans, but fans who really know about the club. And just to end on the aspect of loyalty as well, you're right. It's difficult when you're born, say, somewhere in the Ruhr area, or when you're born somewhere in Bavaria, or somewhere in Manchester, that you have a club that you live and you were born there and you support that particular club. It's different in Asia. We have local clubs that we follow here in our respective markets. But when we look at football at the highest quality. And the stardom in Asia, it depends on the generation that you grew up with. My generation was always about the team. It's all about the quality of the team that plays, the stories that are behind it. So there are a lot of fans that are in the past that are Leeds United fans, for example. There are fans that I know in Asia who is Kaiserslautern fans. Unbelievable, but they know the team that are playing for Kaiserslautern. Unreal. And then you have a generation of fans that follow purely the players. I call it the Beckham syndrome, where you follow David Beckham or Ronaldo, for example. And Beckham leaves for PSG or AC Milan, I follow the club because I want to be with the players. So there is this trend, fortunately, unfortunately, in Asia, where it's very, very driven towards individual players. And it's all based on the generations that you are growing up with. And it's the same here right now in Asia. Now Ronaldo going back to Manchester United, you see more red shirts in the market. You see more PSG shirts being in the market because Messi is in PSG. So it's what it is, unfortunately. But there is this inclination with players.
It's the same in the US. And, it's very common here across all the sports. If you watch an NBA game, it is never, the Los Angeles Lakers are playing, I don't know, the New York Knicks. It's always Julius Randle and the Knicks versus LeBron James and his Lakers. It's always Tom Brady playing Bill Belichick or whoever. They always break it down on an individual level. And it just translates. So it's interesting to see that. But it has its pros and cons. I'm not the biggest fan of it either. But you know what? Many ways lead to Rome is a German saying. So as long as we end up on the same understanding of what, why this club is fantastic, I'm all good with it. And to your point, it's like Jörg Heinrich was born in East Germany, somewhere in Brandenburg, in a small-ass town in Brandenburg. By his age, the wall was still up. And I'm pretty sure for most of his youth, even young adulthood, he didn't even fathom going to West Germany, let alone ending up one day in Indonesia and having people in a country that 30 years ago he couldn't even dream of visiting, ask him about his family and his playing days.
Exactly, Tilo. I was just with him a couple of days ago when we were in Berlin. We were in Dortmund, and we were chatting. And he said, "Suresh, thank you, man. I've been with you to Australia, to Vietnam, to Singapore, to Indonesia, Man, this is unreal, man. I've never dreamt in 100 years that I will be in a market like that, experience a different culture, and talk about Dortmund. I mean, think about it, man. And I mean, obviously, to his credit, his English is much better now. I mean, of course, we do a little bit of English and a little bit of basic German just to get by, but his English is much better now. And so, and then my colleagues came to me and said, Suresh, I saw you on the table over dinner, and you were sitting with your Heinrich. Man, what are you guys talking about? For almost 40 minutes, you were laughing, blah, blah, blah. I said, we spoke English. I said, are you serious? I said, yeah, we spoke English. I said, wow, that's great, man. I said, yeah, we spoke English and we had a bit of translation in German here and there, but it worked. And we knew exactly how to touch the right points and on the right topics. And he was like, man, you guys are funny, man. We were just scratching our heads and say, what are you guys on about, man? So it was cool, man. It was really funny.
Yeah, I love that. At the end of the day, this game just speaks a common language. Like, if you're on the same wavelength and you understand the game the same way, you can communicate with so many people, and that's so beautiful. Like, I don't know, whether you get in the cab in Mexico or, you know, in an airport in Australia, if it's like, oh, wow, somebody sees a shirt, it's like, this is your club. Yeah. The emotions, the, you know, what you share, it translates, so that's cool, yeah. And, you know, to York's credit, I'm pretty sure he probably had to learn Russian in school back in the day, so.
I'm not surprised, probably.
I mean, I was born in East Berlin, so.
Okay.
And yeah, my parents were probably not that much older. Like, that was still the language I had to learn in school, Russian, so they never had any English in school.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know. Hey, you know, gotta give the brother a break there. skipping over Jörg Heinrich, and you know, we were just talking about fans in Indonesia. Where are the big yellow, black and yellow hotspots in Asia? Because I know there are some really big fan clubs, like the guys in Thailand are doing amazing work. We just talked about Singapore. I know in China there's lots of stuff going on with Benny Weil. To your knowledge, like, where is, like, big congregations, clubs or whatever?
I think for Asia, I would say the three biggest, I would say Vietnam is number one. I think they've got the biggest engagement.
Vietnam?
Yep. If you were to look in social media numbers, and if there's any engagement, international engagement, they bypass Germany as well in terms of how high the engagement levels are in Vietnam. So I would say Vietnam, I would say Indonesia and Thailand, obviously. So these three biggest Southeast Asian markets, I would say, are the hotbeds, hot spots for black and yellow. China, of course, with various parts, and a big credit to Benny Weil for obviously planting these flags in and around China. The market of India, they're slowly building up, and especially now with our new club partnership in Hyderabad, which has built a bit of a black and yellow feel to it. Japan, I will never discount the fact that Japan was the door opener for us since Shinji was there. So that's obviously a market that I will not forget. And Korea. And now I would say Korea. Korea is a market that has produced a lot of Bundesliga players from Korea. So Korean players that have gone to Bundesliga to play. So these 5-6 markets, I would say the rest, I would say these markets as markets A, or on the verge, some of them are in the bits of markets A and B. So Singapore, Malaysia, these are probably, I would say, markets B. There are some good sort of momentum with these countries, but I wouldn't say that they have spent a lot on the club on an aggressive basis with online, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, totally. What about Australia though? Like, you know, we had Mitch Langerak, Mustafi for a time, even though he didn't really like break into the team.
We had such a great momentum in Australia in the last 2 years. We had a partnership with Club Marconi in New South Wales, which was such an important milestone for us, because they were one of the, they are not, they are like the conference, not conference league, the championship of the English football scene. And they're not the Premier League, but the championship, but the top, the number one championship team in Australia. And they have produced so many top talents, like the Mark Fidukas of this world previously. And that's exactly what we were trying to reach, because they have such a hotbed of youth prospects, and we wanted to see what we could do in Australia. And build on that, and also the momentum with the Bundesliga as well, that they were looking into a few opportunities. There was Puma there that we were looking to build a little bit more. And then, as they say, at the end of 2019, early 2020, then it all started to deflate because of the whole Corona situation, and we lost a lot of
momentum.
A lot of touch points momentum and touch points in Australia. And yeah, it's just been tough right now. I mean, we have not been on ground. I'm actually due to speak to a colleague, to a good partner of mine called Buddy Farah, which I'm due to speak to him today, and just to see what's going on in Australia. Because to be honest, they've been in lockdown for a long time, and they've just started to open up. And the question is, what else and what more could we do? But yeah, Australia was such a big market for us that we wanted to expand and grow a little bit more on that part of Oceania region. But we are putting everything on ice right now, because honestly, if we can't travel to Australia, think about it, it's more than 20 hours to come from Europe all the way to Australia. It's not an easy flight. Usually you do a stopover somewhere.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's just a tough one for us. But let's see. I mean, we have not closed doors, and we will probably revisit this in the next coming months whenever we can.
Hey, each thing at their time, you know, can't do everything at once. Maybe to wrap up, you know, we talked a lot about what Dortmund means, and you obviously not just working for the club, you're a fan of the club, and you're very conscious of, you know, some of like the intrinsical parts, but how do you preserve what the club stands for, you know, while expanding internationally? It's sort of like a balancing act, I would imagine, you know, to keep the club rooted in its sort of like local and in a sense small town. Yes, Dortmund is a large town, you know, depending on where you look on, but it's not a big town in comparison to Singapore or New York or even, you know, Sydney or something like that. So how do you manage that?
Good question. In Dortmund, like I mentioned to you previously as well, I said it's a very traditional club. There are certain roots that are instilled with a club like Dortmund. The club has only started its internationalization 7 years ago. So it's still at its infancy, it's still baby steps, it's still a work in progress for us. And we keep this firmly rooted into the ground. We're not here to quickly go out there and start building Dortmund as if it's the club, you know what I mean? And so I think there are still certain, I would say, principles that are in place that we have to obviously work along and around it, and to ensure that certain messages and that we share are meant for the markets, that for the international fans. And we tend at the same time to also keep the principles of the club at the same time. So it's a fine balance. I don't know how to put it into words, Tilo, but you know, it's just something that you have to roll it out, run it, and at the same time be rooted, if I can all put it in one sentence in that sense, and just be humble. And I think the humility part of this club is so important for us. We, as you see, we won't change the colors of our club. It will be yellow. It will be black. You know what I mean? So these are things that no matter what, and there is a campaign that's going out right now. I don't know if you've seen, it's called No Matter What. And that's such a big, big campaign that we are sending a message out. And no matter what we are, where we come from, who we are, and the situation we are all in, it's still black and yellow, it's still BBB. And that's the sort of message that we take it out of from Dortmund to the rest of the world.
I mean, humbleness, I was just going to say that, but from what you're telling me, I think a big part of is also authenticity, right? You just said it, like you're not overselling, you're not like, this is the best ever. We have certain things that are world-class and maybe even the best in its class, like Atmosphere Stadium. And, you know, we're not shy about it, but it's also like it's an offering.
Yeah.
And I know, for example, that you go to your business meetings, not in a suit, but you wear a jersey. So you sit there with all the reps from all the other clubs and leagues, whatever. And in comes Suresh in his Dortmund tracksuit. And everybody's like, hey, did I not get a memo?
Funny you mentioned that, Tilo. And you're right. I mean, that was the key word that I was probably trying to look for. It's authenticity. And that's something that is authentic about the club. It's real. We're not fake. It's real. This is exactly what the club is. You know, we are rooted back to where football is. If you go to our dressing rooms, it's the same dressing rooms. We don't have nice seats from the Formula One cars that's been put into the dressing room. We don't have stuff like that. It's just a stadium because we're here to play football. And and you're right. And whenever I go for meetings, yeah, maybe not all meetings, but some meetings, I want to represent the club. I mean, yes, I like being in a suit and a tie sometimes, but I work for a football club, man. I need to be in a nice track suit with my BVB emblem on my chest. This is the club that I work for. And I walk into the rooms and some of them said, man, did you just bring a player that came from the training ground? Then I was like, yeah, I was almost there, but not close enough. So, you know, we start with that kind of humor and then we talk about football. And I'm here to represent the club because we're a football club. We're not a commercial industry or an organization in that sense. And when I talk about football, it's about everything from the club to the players, to the youth philosophy, to CSR, to marketing, you name it. It's to do with BVB.
Well, in my humble opinion, the club is in very good hands with you, in your hands and in Benny's hands and your team's hands. I feel it's important. And I feel that's what makes Dortmund and, you know, a lot of the other traditional clubs special is that people that work there actually care about this club. It's not just an employer. And then, you know, in 2 years, they're moving on to the next team. And then, you know, how people sometimes bounce around in the sports industry. No, like a lot of people really deeply care about this club and just this club. And that's cool. And so, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate you also holding up the black and yellow flag, literally, very literally, all over Asia. And just out of curiosity, now really the last thing, but do you know, because I know you've been waiting on the team to come again. You were scheduled to have an Asia tour, 2 years in a row. Obviously, we here in the States are also, you know, always happy when the team comes. So do you know what's happening next? Are you guys finally getting your tour in 2023 if everything, you know?
Yeah. The plan is obviously to travel in 22. Again, it's a tough one for us in 22 because we've got the World Cup next year as well. So I think the season will start much earlier. I think the players probably would have a much shorter break. We need to just really think about how we would be able to travel. It also depends on Corona restrictions and measures in the markets. So season will end in May and the league starts in July, if I'm not wrong. So again, it's we have relatively a very short period of time to turn it around. For them to go on their vacation, come back for pre-season, and then start in July, and then have a break for the World Cup, and then back again. So the plans are always there, and I'm a big advocate in terms of trying to push the club to come and travel internationally. But I think it's beyond my powers, to be very honest with you. It's also a situation where we need to review and see what is it out there for 22. But if there is an opportunity, I would love to see the team travel.
Yeah, me too. Because the sooner they go to Asia, the sooner they come back to the States.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Suresh, man, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for, you know, giving us a little bit of an insight into your work and what you do and really into yourself. You're such a great character. And again,
I think
Dortmund is in great hands.
Thank you.
I hope to have you back sometime soon and hear about, I don't know, travel plans or whatever else you got going on in Asia. So thank you for your time. And yeah, good luck spreading the black and yellow love.
Thanks, Tilo. And a pleasure to be part of this podcast and on your show as well. Thanks for having me. And appreciate the chat. It was nice and fun and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in again to Believe in Borussia, presented by BetOnline. Shout out to Suresh for taking time and sitting down with us to speak. We will pick it up again with the Borussia Dortmund history in the next episode. And until then, a black and yellow shout out across America.
They've done it! Incredible! Unbelievable! Astonishing! Dortmund gets it!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.